right, take your Bibles. Proverbs chapter 11. We're continuing on our journey through Proverbs about hatred. It's not for cows either. Cows taste good. Almost as good as venison. And, oh dear. We won't go there. All right. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 15. I got to stay on target or it's going to get bad. Proverbs chapter 11. Look at verse number 15. He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure. That's a tongue twister of a verse. Of course, we've been talking about hatred. The word hatred is a very strong word. It's not a strong dislike for something. The word hatred is, it's an intense word. It's only used 22 times in the book of Proverbs. And not all hatred is bad hatred. Of course, in Proverbs, you see often the positive as well as the negative. And with that, by the way, I was at the property this week. Some of the doors were delivered today. They have the main trunk lines for the HVAC in, and they're working on some of the hard duct work on it as well. So we're making progress out there. Supposedly, they're going to be putting doors in tomorrow, hopefully working on siding this week as well, and we'll go from there. But you say, what did that have to do with hatred? I hate bad weather, and I hate things aren't done. But hatred is something that's more than just a dislike for something. I can say, I hate squash, or I hate this food or whatever. But that's not really hatred. I might not like it. It's a dislike. But if I had to, I could poke it down the pie hole and probably keep it down. You say, well, there are some things I don't, you know, you could if you were hungry enough, and if you had to, you could. You may not like it, but it's not a hatred per se. Hatred is a very intense word. Here in Proverbs chapter 11, we've, of course, gone through nine other things here. We have seen that God hates things. God doesn't hate people, but God hates sin. God hates evil. Matter of fact, in Proverbs chapter 6, it said, these six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are abomination unto him. We went through those things. But here in Proverbs chapter 11, I want you to notice again, he that is surety for a stranger smarteth for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure. Here's the principle. We need to hate putting our name on the line for someone we don't know. The word surety is the same word we would use as cosigner, like for a mortgage, for money, for reputation. For instance, there's been times someone has asked me to be a reference for them on a job. Or I've said to somebody, I want you to go here, go and tell them I personally sent you. In other words, I'm putting my neck on the line that you're going to go do what you're supposed to do. By the way, I don't mind being a job reference for somebody, but I am going to tell the truth, just so you know. I do that. But the word surety is in reference to a mortgage, a money, a reputation type issue. People who are secure financially hate risking their money on someone they don't know. I'm going to make some statements here that are not politically correct. That's never stopped me before. But someone who is secure financially didn't get secure financially by putting their name on the line for just anybody. They got secure financially because they didn't put their name on the line for people that were going to lose their money for them. They were able to know that if they invested that, they were going to get a return on that investment, or at least get the initial investment back. They weren't going to lose money. I realize many of you have 401k or 403bs or something like that for retirement. most of that goes into the stock market, and it goes up and down, up and down, up and down as the stock market goes up and down. You may have initially started with, let's say, $50,000. It may grow over a period of years to where you have $250,000, but yet the stock market dropped almost 800 points the other day, so you may have lost $15,000 in one day, let's say. You say, well, that's a big loss. Yeah, but you went from 250 to 235 and you started with 50. So you still gained. Does that make sense to everybody? And anybody that knows the stock market, you stay in it long enough, you're going to come back up to where you were. Especially in the days of politics in the stock market. And a lot of it is politics, by the way. So people who are secure in reputation, financially, and stability, they don't risk their name just for anybody. There are people that come to me and say, "Preacher, I need a job." They've only had 14 of them in the last 6 months. I'm not probably going to go help them go get a job. I may point them in the right direction to a job temp agency and say, go do what they say. But don't tell them I sent you. You say, why? Because I'm not putting my name on the line for somebody like that. It's just, if somebody says their car's broken down, but I know they can't pay their bills, and they want me to recommend them to somebody, I'm going to tell them, go to a mechanic you like. I'm not going to put my name on the reputation with the mechanics that I know to get stuck with their bill. Does that make sense to everybody? So that's what hating suretyship is all about. Putting your reputation or your name on the line for someone who's going to mess it up. People who are secure in reputation hate putting their reputation on the line for somebody they don't know. Just because a missionary calls the church here doesn't mean they're going to stop and preach here. We probably average anywhere from 1 to 3 calls a week for missionaries. Literally. Oh, we're going to be in your area. We'd like to present our work. And one of these days, we're going to have some missionaries through here when I have a building that we can put them in. But right now, we're not taking on any missions. We're not changing anything about it until we get into the new building and see where we land. So I've put everything on hold. But by the way, I research every missionary. I have a file that Mrs. Barnes helps me keep, and as they call, I research them and say, either put them in this file or I'll put them in that file. And that's about how it goes. Because, and by the way, there are some that are decent people, but they've not treated my secretary right, and I threw it away. I have one in particular that was a bit rude. I said, I don't care where they're from or where they're going or anything else. I said, I don't even want the information. Just tear it up and throw it in the trash can. If you're going to be rude to the people that you want to get money from, too bad, you're not getting it from me. Sorry, I just, there's something about that that bothers me. People of lesser character and finances have a difficult time understanding why those who have are slow to let go. I'm going to make a statement here. One of these days I'm going to preach a whole sermon on this. Do you realize that most hatred goes up the line and doesn't come down the line? Hatred usually goes from bottom up. It doesn't go from top down. Fellowship usually hates leadership. Leadership doesn't hate fellowship. It's the guy on the bottom end of the totem pole at McDonald's that thinks he knows how to run it better than the people at the top. He hates everybody that's got more money than him. The poor person hates the rich people. The rich people don't hate the poor people. So it's the, you see what I mean by it starts at the bottom. Generally, hatred is generated from someone down here to someone up here. Let me say it this way. When someone says, I hate you, what they're saying is, you're a better person than I am, and I despise that. My enemies, I don't hate. I won't step down to be what they are. Now, I didn't say they don't hurt me. I didn't say what they say doesn't affect me. But I won't step down to where they are, to go where they are, You see, a child will tell a parent, I hate you. You don't hear parents tell children, I hate you. There's days you want to rip the head off and spit down the hole. But you don't hate them. So generally, hatred starts at the bottom and works its way up. It's the employee who hates the supervisor. It's the supervisor who hates the boss. It's not working from the top down. Does that make sense? So hatred means, in reputation, someone of lesser character hates someone of greater character. Okay, I have nobody in mind, so if this is you, I'm not thinking about you. But people who struggle showing up to work on time, they hate everybody that shows up to work on time. Well, you just don't understand. We have the same 24 hours a day as everybody else does. We don't like getting out of bed any more than anybody else does. We fight the same traffic you fight. Some of us fight it earlier, so we don't have as much of it to fight. But it's always somebody else's fault. Hatred always, almost always goes up the line. Very rarely comes down the line. It's not unusual. And I'm going to digress for just a moment. You see most often a child who will injure, hurt, or even kill a parent. Very rarely do you ever see a parent kill a child or wound a child like that. Rarely. That hatred is always going up, rarely comes down. I got to hurry. So people who have a secure reputation, who are secure financially, secure in different areas, they hate putting their name on the line, that surety ship, for someone they don't know. I love the words here. He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it. That term smart means hurt. Did you ever, some of you old timers, remember your parents or your grandparents, they'd smack their finger and say, boy, that really smarted. In other words, you're not going to do it the second time. You were smart enough not to do it again, usually. That really smarts. That means it really hurt. He that is surety for a stranger is going to end up getting hurt by it. I have done that. We had a man in our church. Somebody asked him to help him borrow $5,000, and I said I wouldn't sign on it. Not a person I would sign for. Said, oh, it's okay, preacher. First payment came due and the guy left town. And then all of a sudden, I'm the bad guy and I have about three or four people that are upset with me because I told this guy to sign on the line for this guy and I didn't. I ended up paying the $5,000 back. And I took a loan out to pay it off in my name. Say why? So I didn't have rumblings of people in the church upset with me because I didn't even ask the guy. I told the guy not to do it. I ended up paying that bill off. Such is life. It is what it is. But be careful. I'm not saying it's never okay to do it. But I always tell people, if you're not willing to lose that money, don't do it. All right, here we go. Proverbs chapter 12. Y'all doing all right? You awake? Maybe you open a couple windows. All right, Proverbs chapter 12. Look at verse number 1. Whoso loveth instruction loveth knowledge, but he that hateth reproof is brutish. I love this one. People who hate correction are brutish. Now, notice it says here, whoso loveth instruction loveth knowledge. But he that hateth reproof is brutish. The word reproof there is the word correction. The word brutish, it's one of my favorite Bible words. It means to eat up or to consume, to set on fire, to waste. It means Mrs. Barnes isn't going to like this, but it's actually in the Hebrew. It means stupid like a cow. It really does. It means animalistic. Cows are push and shove each other to get what they want. That's what brutishness is. It's that brute strength just to get that piece of grass. You know, it's the word brutish means you allow it to eat you up to the point where you get angry enough to start pushing and shoving to get whatever you want. And you end up being, I hate using the word stupid, but that's what it really means. Hating correction makes you stupid and easy to take to destruction. Someone who hates to be corrected. There's a difference in correction and punishment. Somebody tells you you're wrong doesn't mean you've been punished. It means you're trying to fix it so that you don't do that wrong again. Correction, if you don't correct something, you're going to crash. All of you adults in here drive. Do you know that driving is nothing but a series of corrections? You don't hold the steering wheel perfectly still. If you do, you're going to be in another lane or in the ditch eventually. Say why? Because the road moves, the tire's moving, everything's not exactly balanced in there. Things are going to start leaning. And that's why you're constantly moving that wheel back and forth ever so slightly. But if you're going 70 miles an hour down I-81 and you go to correct something, you have troubles, Houston. You're going to be spinning or flipping or both. You don't overturn it either. Slight corrections. Those slight corrections in life aren't bad. The ones you don't like is when somebody jerks the wheel. God says, he that hateth reproof is brutish. Somebody that's constantly moving you back and forth, just ever so slightly to keep you in line, that's not a bad thing. But there are people that don't like it. Just leave me alone. I can do it. I've got this. That's a good way to find out you don't know much. I counseled a pastor today. He has a situation. And he called me about it a week ago. I took a side of it he did not expect me to take. 7 days later, he calls me and says, how in the world did you know from all these miles away? And I said, I just had a feeling. I've been through enough of these. I knew who one party was involved. And I felt like the other party needed defended till the truth came out. Truth came out. He said, okay, now what do I do? And I said, well, they didn't receive correction. Now we got to get harsh. And I worked with him on it. Can I tell you something? Somebody that receives correction, oh, that was wrong? Okay. Do you know that big league baseball players still have batting coaches? How many of you know what T-ball is? You know, that's what those little shavers play. We never got to play T-ball. We always had the coach throwing it at us or somebody beaming us in the head with it, whatever. But T-ball is generally for the smaller children to teach them hand-eye coordination, put the ball in play, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you know that pro baseball players hit off of a tee almost as much as they hit off of a pitching machine or somebody throwing the ball at them? Especially if they're going through a hitting slump. They're looking for a zone, looking for where that pitch is, getting the eye in tune with it so that they know exactly where that's at. If you go under the behind the dugouts into the underbelly of the stadiums, you'll see inside batting cages in there, and there's tees set up in there for them to hit off of. If you watch one of the home run derby contests, you'll see the guys warming up under those things, and most of the time they're hitting off a tee. They're looking for that one sweet spot to lift that ball. And that's the only pitch they're going to swing at. Because they know if they do, it's going to be a home run. So they're looking, and it's kind of like automatic memory. getting that automatic muscle memory so that as soon as the eye sees it, it's time to unscrew. And that is exactly what this is about. Brutish people push and shove like a cow, but they're not smarter than the farmer. They might think they are, but they're not. Correction is not punishment. It's there to fix something so that you don't do it again. And I got to hurry, number 12. Proverbs chapter 13, look at verse number 5. A righteous man hateth lying, but a wicked man is loathsome and cometh to shame. Righteous people hate lying. Can I tell you something? I hate lying. I'm not the most righteous person in the world, but the more lies that are told, the more upset I get. I can take the truth. I can fix something, but when people lie, they just complicate it that much more. One reason I despise the United States media right now is because so much lying that goes on. There is so much untruth and flat-out lying that goes on. Even in politics, so much lying that takes place. It's bothersome. People who try to live right and live obediently hate lying. It bothers me. I was driving back from the airport on Monday. I'm doing the speed limit on 70 coming back from Baltimore. Man, I got somebody going 90 miles an hour in the right-hand lane. That bothers me. We were near the airport. We were getting on, we were on 95. I got off 695 on the 95, and there's like a 2 mile stretch there, and then you get on 195 and head into the airport. As we got on 95, this guy come through in a little Nissan or some kind of a little rice rocket, and he had to be doing 85 or 90, and everybody else was doing about 50. And he's weaving in and out of traffic, two and three lanes at a time, going back and forth. And Mrs. Jorgensen was having a cow. She was like, look at that guy. And all of a sudden, traffic is stopping up there. He was driving on the shoulder over here and then whipped across to the shoulder over here. I mean, he was going everywhere. And I thought, my first thought was, man, I hope there's an officer up there. I hope the guy gets caught, because somebody like that's going to create a lot of problems for somebody. Somebody innocent's going to get hit and hurt by a jerk like that. I hate that. Lying is non-truth. Righteousness needs truth, or it cannot be righteous. Do you know that righteousness requires truth? For it to be right, there has to be a difference between right and wrong. If it's not truth, there is no right or wrong. So righteousness requires truth. Again, I don't expect everybody to live this way. And if you don't, you're fine. I don't read fiction books. You say, why? I fill my mind with truth. I can't afford to go into La La Land and let my mind wander. It's too weak to go very far anyway, but I can't allow that to come in and affect the preaching of truth. So I don't read novels. I don't read fiction books. I don't read anything like that. I haven't for, Lord knows, 35 years or so. I haven't read a fiction book in decades, many decades. I have to fill my mind with truth, and that's what I do. That's why I'm careful what news I read anymore. I can't allow the lies of the news to affect me. That's why I don't get involved in social media and reading all the Facebook posts and this and that. And you say, well, it was on Facebook, so this must be true. Right. Well, it was on Pinterest, so it had to be true. Right. Just because it's in print doesn't mean it's true. You could read Michelle Obama's book or President Obama's book or Hillary's book and find out it's full of non-truth. You know, what a joke. I'm careful whose biographies I read. I read a lot of biographies, autobiographies. I read truth books. I read books about great leaders, etc., etc., etc. Lying and is not fair to those who tell the truth. I used to tell students who would come to class late, I used to tell them, if I have 30 students and you come to class 2 minutes late, you just wasted an hour. That's 2 minutes of 30 people's time, which equals 60 minutes. You just wasted an hour. And I would, more at the college level than high school, but I hated. You know, you'd have a class of 30, 40 students, and then somebody comes in 5 minutes late, they just wasted over 3.5 hours. You know, when we start valuing things in the right sense, we start seeing things in that light. Lying eventually causes shame to the one who lies. Eventually, you get caught in your lies. I've got to hurry. I'm going to do two or three more, and then we're going to be done. Next, Proverbs chapter 13, look at verse number 24. This is some of your favorite verses here. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. A parent who does not chasten a child hates his child, scripturally speaking. Now, the word chasten does not mean beat, just so you know. But we're seeing what happens to a generation that's not corrected. Look at the kids today that can't handle a teacher saying, well, that's wrong. We can't even keep score at a child's ball game anymore because somebody might get their feelings hurt. We call it the snowflake generation. They're so gentle and delicate, we can't afford to upset it. Bless God, my daddy upset more than just the snowflake, let me tell you. Yeah, it was a snow blower, and I got right through the auger, amen? More than once. The lack of discipline or correction at home creates the disrespect for all authority today. I get a little upset, and please don't think that this is in any way intended to be racial, because it's not, but I get a little tired of what people call minorities saying, well, you just don't understand. We have to teach our kids how to behave around a police officer. My father taught me from the time I could walk and talk how to handle myself around a police officer. I have no problem saying that. When I started driving, my dad said, when you get pulled over, he didn't say if, he said when. So when you get pulled over by a police officer, first thing you should do is pull off the side of the road, put your hands on top of the steering wheel so he can see your hands, roll the window down, and wait and do whatever he tells you to do. He said, doesn't matter. He said, if he puts you in handcuffs, you'll let him do it. We'll figure it out in court later. If you're right and he's wrong, that's what the court system's for. But you do what he says. That way, we got you home sometime. I was taught that. I thought that's what parents were supposed to do. Where is it that a police officer knows that you're a good person? They've not met you before. If they have, we won't go there. If you know them all that well, you have more problems than you need. You see, the lack of discipline and correction for all authority... Okay, I'm 51 years old, and please, I'm going to use this term, and there's two terms that my dad did not let me use when I was a kid. He never called an officer a cop. I don't know why, but he said don't do it, and he said disrespectful, so I didn't. And he never called him a PIG. I can't even say it, because I'm afraid my dad would get up and whoop me if I did. He said, if I ever hear you, I'm going to take you to the police station myself. So I never did. I've never referred to him that way. I just was taught authority is authority. I was taught, good night, if you got in trouble at school, you got in trouble when you got home. You say, but Dad, he said, it doesn't matter. He said, you did things you didn't get caught for. Just get it over with now. You see, when we had paddling in the schools, we didn't have the inmates running the institution that we have today. You had people learning truth. When I went to school, the teachers paddled the students still. I mean, if you got in trouble, you didn't get sent to the principal's office to get paddled. You just went out in the hallway, and the teacher got the teacher next door to witness it, and you bent over and got it. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Most everybody in here is old enough. The teachers just did it. I don't know if I should tell this story. I was in sixth grade. We're at Pfeiffer Middle School. I had a teacher. His name was Mr. Rexrode. God bless him. He was odd. I think he was Mr. Rogers' cousin. He was just kind of that way. He was a bit of a weird duck. Well, one day he was telling this story that something he did, and it wasn't real intelligent. And I didn't know I was talking out loud. I just was sitting there on the front row, minding my own business. And he said it, and I said, "You big dummy." I didn't know I said it out loud. So I had to write 300 times. I will not call Mr. Rexrode a dummy. So I wrote it 300 times on the front piece of paper. Real small. He didn't like that. Anyway, I got in trouble for something else, and he was going to paddle me. He couldn't find anybody else, and he had me lined up right at the end of the lockers. So when he come, he'd get about a three-step head start. Coming through there. And I heard the old feet a-moving, and I just moved forward just a little bit. And when he brought that paddle down, it went bang right against that locker. That thing shook in his hand. He didn't see me move because he was hopping and jumping too much. He said, "Man." He said, "Get back in there, Bush." I ended up having to write 500 sentences about something or else. His hands hurt too bad to paddle me. So that's the only paddling I didn't get. Amen. I got a whole bunch more that I should have got. It's okay, Ellen. You didn't have to swallow your teeth. But I don't ever remember getting a paddling at school. That was the only one I was about to get. And I got out of that. Thank God for lockers. That's all I can tell you. You see, people, you got to love truth. Lying eventually causes the one, but also, if you love your child, you will chasten them. You don't say, "Go do whatever you want." You got to teach them you don't cross the street without looking both ways multiple times. You love your child by teaching them how to protect themselves and how to obey authority so that when the time does come, and they need to listen to authority, they'll listen to authority. Listen to this statement. Paddling is good for children who disobey, and it creates love. It does not create hate. I've had more than one child that as a principal I had to, years ago, issue corporal punishment to. I had teenage boys walk up and hug me saying, "You're the only man who loves me enough to do that. My dad or my stepdad won't do it." And I hated it. I used to throw the stupid thing on the floor. I hated doing it. It bothered me. They knew it wasn't something I enjoyed doing. It has to be done in love, not in anger. It has to be done the appropriate way and in the appropriate place that God made to be paddled. Hate the sin and the wrong, not the sinner. I gotta hurry. Number 14. Look at Proverbs chapter 14. We might just end on this one. Depends how fast we get through it here. Verse number 17. Proverbs 14:17. "He that is soon angry dealeth foolishly, and a man of wicked devices is hated." Now listen to this. People who invent wicked devices will be hated. Now that term, wicked devices, the word device means intent, inventions, mischievous devices, wicked thinking, and lewdness. Boy, does that open up a can of worms. people who have or use or make wicked devices will be hated. I.e., the porn industry. Hugh Hefner. The smoking industry. Wicked devices. The alcohol industry. Anheuser-Busch, Coors, all that kind of stuff. Those are not good people. They've invented wicked devices by which to make a lot of money off of people and ruin lives in the process. Hollywood. The television has ruined an awful lot of people. Hollywood has changed American culture. It has changed world culture. The music industry is wicked devices. The Rolling Stones, Black Sabbath, all the rock groups of yesteryear and current year, I don't know what they are, and I only know those because they're just names that were out there all the time. Those are wicked devices. When I was a younger teen or preteen, there was a rock group out, I think it was called Kiss, K-I-S-S, is that right? A bunch of evil, vile, satanic people. They really were. Most people don't understand. Kiss stood for, and if you look on their albums and things, there's a period after each letter, stood for Kids in Satan's Service. That's what it stood for. And parents by the millions let their children listen to that stuff. I'll promise you one thing. If one came home, it was going to be a target in the backyard. My dad wouldn't allow that. You see, wicked devices. Look at all the evil devices of today. And I'm not even going to go any farther with that in mixed company. Let's go one more. And it's related to one that we did earlier. Proverbs chapter 15, look at verse 10. Correction is grievous unto him that forsaketh the way, and he that hateth reproof shall die. God, a little while ago, we read in chapter 13, I believe, or chapter 12, talked about correction. People that hate correction are brutish. But here God says, those that hate correction actually die. Or kill someone. Watch this. People who hate correction are higher risk people. They'll take a higher risk. People that are on drugs take higher risks. People that are drunk take a risk. Don't drink and drive. Why? Well, I can do it. I can handle it. Yeah, talk to the neighbors of Harry and Kathy. Saturday night, guy went down Shockey Boulevard and went off the road and crashed through somebody's shed, ripped the shed, right through the shed, and tore half their Christmas decorations out of the yard. And the guy said, I didn't hit any shed, and half of it's laying on top of his car. Blew a 1.7 or 0.17 on the breathalyzer. More than twice the legal limit. But he didn't do it. You say, what is that? He hated correction. Therefore, he's taking a higher risk. Immorality. Look at all the diseases transmitted by immorality today. Young people and old people who drive too fast. You're taking risks. Bad decision-making process. Financially bad decisions. Fighting. Those are all risks. And those that don't take correction end up in these practices. They become repeat offenders in the jail or correction system. People who can't accept correction usually end up lifelong in correction. Why is it called a correctional center? Why is it called the Department of Corrections? We're supposed to correct their behavior because they couldn't follow orders. They kill success. Do you know people who won't be corrected generally don't move up the line where they work? They stay stagnant. Or they work by themselves or for themselves. They kill reputation. They kill influence. Folks, you've got to learn to take correction, whether it be spiritual, whether it be in the work world, whether it be in your home. There's times a wife has to help correct her husband, not in a inappropriate way, but there are times. I wore a coat and a tie the other day, and my wife said, "When you get home, can you change that?" That means it didn't go quite real well. Mm-hmm. You pick one out. Obviously, I'm not seeing what you're seeing. No problem. She politely corrected it. I was glad. I think. Didn't bother me. But it sure was bothering her. You know, I didn't take offense at that. There are times where we all need corrected. Correction is not a bad thing. God says that if you don't take correction, it's going to kill. It's going to kill your finances. It's going to kill your success. It'll kill your productivity. Learn to take correction. Correction is not that bad of a thing, as long as we take it the right way. Every head bowed, every eye closed. There are some things we should hate. There are some things we should not hate. And God has showed us in His Word exactly what we should and should not do.